Okay. I'm going to be talking about the X-ray luminosity functions of about a dozen globular clusters that have been observed with Chandra so far. I'm part of a large collaboration whose aim is to try and study the globular clusters through their populations of close binaries. And as I'll show you, the X-ray observations are very efficient for picking out many populations of close binaries. So we've got a number of collaborators in the X-rays, in the optical, in the radio, and we also work with a team of theorists doing numerical simulations. Many of these people are at the conference, of course. I'm going to start off showing you some pictures, some Chandra images of a number of globular clusters that span a wide range of physical parameters. And I'm going to show you, point out a few of the different populations that are immediately observable, and just show you how different many of these clusters are when we view them in the X-rays. And then I'll talk about the luminosity functions, and I'll approach it from two different angles. I'm going to talk about the total number of sources that we see above a given luminosity associated with the cluster, and I'll show that we find a very good correlation between that number and the encounter frequency. And then I'll talk about the slopes of the luminosity functions after that. The images that I'm going to show are these quote-unquote true color images, which Peter mentioned. They're going to have the soft, the low energy photons, 0.5 to 1.2 keV in red, medium energy in green from 1.2 to 2, and then higher energy from 2 to 6 keV in blue. All of the images are going to enclose the cluster's half mass radius. They're all going to be down to the same limiting luminosity, which is about 4 times 10 to the 30 ergs per second. And I'm going to order them in decreasing encounter frequency gamma, which has been normalized so that the encounter frequency of the cluster with the lowest encounter frequency is 1. And the encounter frequency depends on, it goes as the central density times the core volume over the velocity, which in a virialized cluster is rho to the 1.5 times the square of the core radius. And I use numbers, all of the numbers are from the Harris catalog for calculating the encounter frequencies. So the cluster, which has been observed to this, have a deep observation that goes down to 4 times 10 to the 30 with the highest encounter frequency so far has been NGC 6266, which I show here. And again, the lower energy photons are in red and the higher energy photons are in blue. And two populations immediately pick out, and they're both of the brighter sources. You can see of the brighter sources, there are these ones that look yellowish-red and ones that look kind of whitish-blue. And as Peter was saying, these reddish ones are the quiescent low-mass X-ray binaries. They're dominated by the low-energy photons. They have softer spectra. So 6266 has four of these. And then the brighter objects that are bluish-white are the CVs. They have the harder spectra dominated by the higher-energy photons. And the rest of the objects that you see are a mix of the rest of the CVs, millisecond pulsars, active main sequence binaries, and of course in every cluster you're going to have a handful of background objects, but it's usually not too many, and there are ways to subtract those out. So going on down the list in encounter frequency, about the same, we see 47 tuck. I should have mentioned in 6266 we saw about 50 sources within the half mass radius and just maybe two or three background AGN. In 47 tuck down to the same limiting luminosity, we see about the same number of sources between 45 and 50 with just a handful of background objects. Here are those two reddish objects that are very bright. Those are the two quiescent LMXBs and a wealth of other objects. So now I'm going to move down further in collision frequency, going from collision frequencies in the hundreds to order of magnitude lower in the tens. And this is NGC 6752, looking inside the half mass radius. And here there's only about 15 or 16 sources. And we don't see any of the brighter sources, which are the quiescent LMXBs. Around the same collision frequency, but just a bit lower, is NGC 7099. Again, just now a handful of sources, about a dozen. Maybe the contrast isn't so good, so I don't know if you can pick them all out. But this one does, in fact, have one of the quiescent LMXBs. And now we're going to move even further down in collision frequency. Now we're at just about 10. And I show M4, NGC 6121, inside the the large half-mass radius. In fact, it didn't all quite fit on the chip for Chandra, so that's why it's cut off a bit at the edge. Here we see about 10 sources with a few, four or five background sources. So now we're getting to just the, you know, a handful of sources actually associated with the cluster. And then we finally come to 6366, which has this encounter frequency of just one in these arbitrary units that I've just normalized here. In this cluster, there are actually only five sources detected. Some of the background that I tried to suppress, which is sometimes hard to do, comes through. But I can tell you there's only five sources that are detected in this image. And of those five, the log in, log s relationships of Giacconi, which is how we estimate our background contribution, says that we should find about four sources in there. So there's probably only one source in 6366 that we see that's actually associated with the cluster. So now that I've taken you through this progression of encounter frequencies, let me just sum up and put all in one plot. It's a little bit busy, but we're going to explore it a few different ways. This is the luminosity functions for 10 of the globular clusters that have been observed so far. The two that I didn't plot were NGC 6366, since a luminosity function from just one source, don't really know what that would look like. And also Omega Centauri, which also, it has many sources detected, but a large fraction of those sources are background objects, so it would give you maybe a slightly misleading luminosity function. So I just leave that off of this plot. It's busy enough as it is. So as you can see, the luminosity functions certainly do vary from cluster to cluster, and this is the first time we're seeing this thanks to Chandra. With the old Rosette numbers, all you could do was make a luminosity function of every globular cluster put together. And now we can actually explore them individually. The clusters have been searched to very different depths depending, you know, on the observation. So if we want to make a uniform study of these clusters, what we have to do is we have to pick, you know, one depth to which all or at least most of them have been searched, and let's look above that limiting luminosity. And so that's what I'll show next, is the number of sources that we pick. We picked as our limit, and this is how we've been carrying on our program, is 4 times 10 to the 30, which usually gives you reasonable exposure times to go down to that depth. And I'm going to plot the number of sources within the half-mass radius above 4 times 10 to the 30 versus the encounter frequency of the cluster in these normalized units. And you see, this is a beautiful correlation over, you know, 2.5 orders of magnitude that we see from the X-ray sources that we see. And so let me remind you again that these X-ray sources are almost all close binaries, right? They're low-mass X-ray binaries, cataclysmic variables, active main sequence binaries, or maybe millisecond pulsars. So these are all close binaries, and we see this great correlation between the number of close binaries, which are very effectively found in the X-rays, and the collision frequency of the cluster. So when I do just a simple maximum likelihood fit to that, I get a slope that the number of sources goes as roughly gamma to the 0.6. So this is a total number of X-ray sources that we see. Now you can imagine what you really want to do is you want to look at this for each individual population. And this is what Craig Heinke's done a lot of work on. I think Josh is going to talk about doing this with the quiescent LMXBs. The LMXBs are an easy population to do this with by themselves because they're easily picked out just on the basis of their X-ray properties. As you saw in the X-ray color magnitude diagram that Peter showed, they really stand off. They're bright, they're soft, they're easy to pick out just on the basis of their X-ray properties in the Chandra data. Whereas the CVs, the millisecond pulsars, the active main sequence binaries, you really need the HST follow-up and you need the millisecond pulsar searches to help you identify what the rest of these clusters are. So I'll just show that for the LMXBs, you can do it easily on the basis of just the X-ray data alone, and I think Josh will talk more about this later, but I mean, clearly what you see is that above a certain encounter frequency, there seems to be a very, very strong dependence on the encounter frequency and the number of LMXBs that you see. And below a certain value, it's kind of a crapshoot. Maybe you'll get one, maybe you won't. Just doing some simple fits to that. When I do a maximum likelihood fit, I find the same relation as I did for the total number of sources, that it goes as gamma to the 0.6. I thought this might have given a little bit more weight to these clusters down here. So I did one of these robust fitting techniques that I looked up in numerical recipes, which isn't as sensitive to outliers. And when I do a fit like that, I find that it's the number of LMXBs that you see is almost linear in the encounter frequency, which is strongly suggestive that, you know, these are all formed through encounters. The same way, you know, almost all the close binaries are. Definitely, as you would expect, the LMXBs are formed primarily through encounters. I guess I forgot to mention with my other plot as well, the red circles are the core collapse clusters, at least listed as such in Harris, whatever that means, as I'm coming to find out. Those are the ones listed by Harris as core collapse, and the ones in black are not. So we don't see too much of a difference. Oh, I'm sorry. The sources with X's right here are the ones that no LMXBs were detected. These weren't. I didn't include these in the fit. These are just the no LMXBs were detected in these clusters, but they were searched to a sufficient depth where you would have seen one if it were there.
Can you project gamma into electron frequencies? The reason I ask is we have rough ideas of what we expect the lifetime of the LMXB phase to be. So just be interested in where.
The question is if we can translate the gamma into a lifetime. I'm not aware. I'm not sure how to do that. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
The reason I want to compare it to the average LMXB lifetime to see how many lifetimes versus exchange times.
Sure. Yeah. I guess we haven't done it yet, but yeah. I guess it's. Not that hard to do.
Another way of asking, what is the unit of gamma?
So gamma has just been normalized in these units where 6366 has one. And so these are just multiples of the lowest encounter frequency that I find. So, yeah. You have to work it out in actual units where I've just normalized these units. These are arbitrary. So the next thing to explore is the slopes of luminosity function. So I'm going to put up this plot again. And maybe it is a little hard to see with so many plotted at once, but we did find that the slopes of the luminosity functions do vary from cluster to cluster. They're generally in the range, the gamma in this relationship right here, it's small gamma, about 0.2 to 0.8. And we look for correlations with the slope of the luminosity function with different parameters. It turned out it didn't correlate at all with the encounter frequency, but there was a slight correlation of gamma with the central density of the cluster. And there are large uncertainties when trying to fit the slope of the luminosity functions that we see. But there is a hint that there's some kind of trend going on. Clusters with low central densities on the average tend to have higher gammas. High central densities have lower gammas, so what that means it's a flatter luminosity function. And we think this could be explained two ways. In the clusters with the highest density, the mass segregation is going to cause the neutron stars to sink to the center of the cluster, which could enhance the neutron star capture rate, which could give you more of the brighter LMXBs and raise up the bright end of that distribution. Also, the neutron stars could disrupt the active main sequence binaries, or the CVs, or CV progenitors, which are the lower luminosity systems, which would decrease the lower luminosity end. Both effects would help give you this flatter luminosity function that you see in clusters with the densest cores. So those are our main findings. And I just want to try and I hope I've shown everybody that the X-ray observations that we've been undertaking and that Josh has been doing and a few other groups have been doing, these are a great way to find the close binaries that we know play a very important role in the cluster. Not only do we find large numbers of close binaries, but we find multiple populations of close binaries all in one shot with Chandra. Of course, it takes a lot of follow-up work to identify most of them, but it's a really great starting point. We've found a direct link between the number of X-ray sources that we see, which is the number of close binaries, and the number of stellar encounters. So this is indicating that these sources are formed primarily, perhaps not exclusively, but primarily through encounters, which is something, you know, that we'd always assumed. And so now we finally find, you know, direct link between the two. So it's nice to see that actually work out. We can also do this for the various subpopulations of the X-ray sources, and we see it does work in the LMXBs, and it'll be nice to explore this relationship for the CVs and the MSPs and the main sequence binaries as we make those identifications. And there is also this anti-correlation between the slope of the luminosity function and the central density, and I gave two possible explanations for that. So thank you.
You're looking at, can you say, you look at your sample in one cluster, and let's take those that have several systems, okay, you have a significant sample. Is that sample dominated by one kind of the different types of sources?
Well, above 4 × 10⁻³, you're only, if you have any LMXBs, it's only going to be a few. It's going to be dominated, I think, by the CVs, and I mean, maybe I'm sure in the 47 talk data set, this is what you're finding. It's mostly the CVs that are dominating.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is that you listed CVs, active binaries, millisecond pulsars. These have very different mechanisms for producing X-rays. And then if you're looking at a single X-ray luminosity function and you know, everything looks continuous and smooth, it surprises me that that would be true, unless, of course, your sample is actually dominated by one type or let's say, accretion system. So then you can get sort of a single, you know, one luminosity function that could represent basically the ones that dominate the sample.
Yeah, it will be interesting to look at the luminosity functions from the separate populations, but I mean, as I said, that's going to take really years of work to make those identifications.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah.
What do we actually know about these QLMXBs? I mean, what are they? What are they? Do we know anything about them? Their masses, their periods, why they're X-ray sources?
There's a period determination for one of the ones in 47 talk, right?
I'll talk about that after.
Yeah.
But that's the only one where you know something about? You don't want to give us a hint. I will come on Thursday.
You don't want to come on Thursday, you can call me.
I just had a question about what we know about softer sources, because I noticed your soft band starts at 0.5 keV. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot, many people have worked on these various data sets. Do you know whether detection algorithms have been run down to, you know, 0.3 keV or 0.1 keV to detect sources that might not have much emission above 0.5?
I'm not sure about that. I started with 0.5 when we first started doing this because the Chandra response wasn't well known below about 0.4. Mm-hmm. And so we just decided to be conservative and just look in a range where we really understood the instrument. I suspect as the responses get better, we could go back and re-examine this data.
Well, for galaxies, what we've done is to actually run the detection algorithm down to lower energy, mm-hmm. but then you have to be very, very careful about each individual source that you've detected.
Oh.
But in fact,
many
groups have done that, and because there are sources that cut off below 0.5. I guess Josh and Paul and Charles had a discovery together with Frank Verbund and his group in two different data sets of a very soft source in M3.
Mm-hmm.
And you would probably miss that with a detection algorithm that only starts at about 0.5.
I'll touch on this a bit on Thursday also. The soft source population in 47 Tuck is, of course, dominated by the millisecond pulsars, as mm-hmm. probably many people here know. I'll show you some more stuff on that. But I wanted to mention on the total individual source populations, I think for our theorist colleagues here, that's really where a lot of the most interesting questions are going to come, not only for how we form these things, but what they're doing in the larger picture to the dynamical history of the cluster. Which ones are the dominant, you know, heat sources that Brian reminded us of at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
One of the big surprises is that, you know, the mundane main sequence binaries are showing up in such abundance in these samples.
Yeah. Well, so a few things about black holes is a few of them could just be below this detection limit of 4 × 10⁻³. But I guess we believe the theorists when they tell us that most of the black holes will have been kicked out. But if there is a black hole there that's, you know, around a few times 10⁻³ to 10⁻³⁡, it's got a soft spectrum. I don't know, on the basis of X-ray properties, I don't think we could distinguish that from a millisecond pulsar, which is also going to be very low luminosity, very soft. So.
In fact, it would be confused most easily with the CV. Yeah, that is a good question. The big evidence against them is that there's never been any evidence that he's seen in the output. But that doesn't mean that there's not some of them there.
They couldn't sense it.
Thank you very much.